It's Talking Point time, and we're going to talk this morning about a harrowing predicament any of us could find ourselves in at a moment's notice. Every year, a small number of bereaved Australian families will be asked to sign the consent form to donate their deceased relative's organs, and approximately 50% will say no. This is a higher refusal rate than most countries, and most families have never been asked about their experience in making their decision. That's changing. Holly Northam is currently involved in research to provide these families with the opportunity to tell their story. And by doing so, she hopes to improve bereaved family hospital experiences when making organ donation decisions and increase the potential benefit to patients awaiting transplantation. Holly Northam is Assistant Professor of Critical Care Nursing at the University of Canberra and was formerly the Organ and Tissue Donation Coordinator for the Australian Capital Territory. Her PhD is about why families are declining organ donation. And it's a very good morning, Holly Northam.
Good morning, Tony.
Holly,
how are you?
Very well, thank you. And I am keen to talk about this discussion because I think so many programs before have been held talking about organ donation and how good or not so good we are at signing up for it and going through with it when the crunch time comes. And I'm sure many of us have also heard these stories about how quite often the families at crunch time will say no when they were quite aware during the lifetime of their loved one, they had said to them, I want to be an organ donor if anything happens to me. The numbers released a couple of weeks ago showed that last year, 2011, 1,001 people had their lives saved or improved after an organ donation, which was a 9% increase on donor numbers from 2010. And my understanding is the previous year it was again an increase. So we are getting better at it. What is the current rate of organ donation in Australia?
Look, that's a really good question. We're now up to, the last year we had 337 families agreed to organ donation, which is a great increase over many previous years. For quite some years we've been sitting at about 200. This is a good thing for our population size, for our increase in population. It should actually be a lot better. So there are steps being made, clearly, to improve the donation rate, which you've referred to. But there's probably a lot more that can be done to support families so that they make a decision to give an opportunity for people in need of a transplant to live, but also to honour the wishes of their loved one.
How do we compare to countries similar to ours around the world?
Well, we still have a really long way to go. We have in Australia around about 14.9 people in every million people in the population who agreed to donate. The country that probably is held as the most successful country for organ donation is Spain. And they have about 35 people in every million people in the population who donate. Those are really hard numbers to get your head around. It's, you know, when we're talking about per millions of people in the population, it's, you know, everything sort of feel everyone going, oh dear, it's a bit hard to conceptualise. But I guess a really good way to get a sense of it is, you know, as a percentage of our population who agree to organ donation when they're asked. At the moment, as you pointed out, a bit over 50% agree to donate their relatives' organs when they're asked. So in a high-performing country, you're looking at over 80% of families will agree that it's a good thing to do at the time when they get asked.
But if you break down the numbers, my understanding is our current donation rate, or last year's donation rate, is the equivalent to 14.9 donors per million people of Australia's population. So let's round that out to 15. 15 out of a million.
That's right.
Is minuscule.
Yes, this is absolutely right.
And there are many more people who need the transplanted organs, aren't there?
Absolutely. Well, that's another of the issues. You know, we talk about the 1,001 people who got a transplant last year in Australia, and we looked for waiting lists, and sometimes, you know, the numbers fluctuate of the people who are listed and are described as being listed on the waiting list. But what's not understood is that that waiting list actually doesn't fully give you an indicator of the need of people who are in the community who have end organ failure, whose kidneys no longer work properly, whose hearts, their lungs, their livers, their pancreases no longer function properly, and who are in need of a transplant, because many of those people will never actually have an opportunity to be considered for transplant because we have so few organs donated.
But nonetheless, we don't want to downplay the fact that over the last couple of years, those numbers are increasing. There are more donors, and that means more people are having their lives saved or improved after an organ donation. Last year, Victoria had 107 donors, the highest number across the nation. And a lot of that was put down to the fact that radio presenter Darren Hinch had health issues which required him to have a liver transplant and the associated publicity surrounding that. It's a funny way to improve the donor rate, isn't it?
Yes, and you know, we have had in the past, you've been able to look at statistics and sometimes see that, for instance, when David Hooks died, we had an increase that year in organ donation, and it was put down to the fact that it becomes very visible as to what a difference it can make into the lives of people that, you know, we see in daily life. When they need a transplant and when one becomes available. So it's that understanding at the time when you're making a decision about organ donation that the decision you're making is actually going to help someone. And at the time, you know, I'm a nurse, and for many years I've worked in a hospital environment where, you know, we work with families who are faced with these decisions. They've just had the absolute tragedy of finding out that their loved one is not going to survive and that death is imminent or has that already occurred. And they're in the throes of making a decision. And when they're asked about organ donation, if they can't understand that, you know, what the benefit's going to be, or what good is there in this decision at a time when it's really very hard to think about, even when you're going to get your next cup of coffee. It's then that if they can flash back and remember something like Darren Hinch got a transplant and gosh, that saved his life, or David Hooks got a transplant, donated his organs and that saved some people's lives. Those are really important things in people's minds at a time when they're making a decision.
What's the current situation in Australia as far as the guidelines surrounding organ donation and how the process works? Is it different from state to territory, or are there national guidelines?
There's national guidelines, effectively, but within each state and territory, they're implemented, they're actually done slightly differently depending on different legislation in each state and territory. And there is a national network which tries to coordinate and pull things together, but there's still some divisions within each of those states and territories which make it sometimes a little bit difficult because we have logistical difficulties at times. We live in a very big country, and so a lot of the government money that's been put towards improving the organ donation rate is set up to try and correct some of those deficiencies.
Is there actually a place you can go or something you can do which can lay out beyond doubt that you wish to be a donor, and no matter how distressed and traumatised your loved ones are at the time of your passing, particularly if it's sudden, they cannot overrule what you said when you were alive?
No. In practice, we have all sorts of legislation that allows that to happen in various states and territories. However, when you're working in a hospital environment and the healthcare team are there with a grieving family, and this is no matter where we are in the world, and particularly Spain, who does it very, very well, they won't override the wishes of a grieving family who sincerely can't cope with the idea of organ donation. And there's several reasons for that. I guess the most important reason is that most health professionals are taught not to do harm where possible, and of course the idea of traumatising a grieving family is something that no health professional wants to do. The other effect that can also happen is that if you start doing that and it becomes public knowledge, then it actually does a lot more harm to your organ donation rate than by making sure that the staff who are tasked with working with a family when they actually have to agree to organ donation do it really well. So it really puts the emphasis back in the high-performing countries and in Australia and anywhere that does good healthcare, that the effort to talk with a family and care for a family at a time when they're grieving should be done very, very well, so that if there is a known wish by someone to donate, that their wishes will be honoured and respected because the family have had really good care, really good information, really good support, because very few families who get proper information and care will overturn the wishes of their relative.
Well, you've certainly been in that situation, and I'll come to what that's like in a few moments' time, but taking on board everything you've already said to us about this and whether there is legislation that could be used, but medical people would be very, very reluctant to force that on a family or try and go down the legal course. Is this why it's impressed on us as being so important that well before any time of trauma or tragedy, in a sober, clear moment, we're encouraged to state our wishes to loved ones and tell them exactly what we want in time of crisis?
It really does make a huge difference to families, but I can't stress this enough, having worked with families who have had to make these decisions. When you have that conversation, it's very important to then find some way of documenting it, and we strongly recommend that if you're going to document it, the best way to document it is on the Australian Organ Donor Register, because that way, at the time when you're faced with making that decision, and it can be after days of being awake without adequate sleep, suffering through the grief of this traumatic event, if somebody can actually, you know, show you the card or the documentation where your loved one has actually said, yes, this is what I really want, it does help families to have a clear decision, because they struggle at times to remember. They say, like, I think we had that conversation, I'm sure he said that, but can you remember now exactly what they said? And so having that bit of paper, just it gives them so much reassurance, and it makes it a much easier decision for a family.
Hmm. Can I quote a couple of things to you from a recent discussion in a newspaper that was headed, Should Families Have the Final Say on Organ Donation? Professor Lone Skeen from the Melbourne Law School said, people who want to be donors should discuss their wishes with relatives and formally register as a donor. When relatives are reminded of the deceased's wishes later, they are more likely to accept the wishes of the deceased person about the donation. Bruce Myerson, who is a double transplant recipient and the founder and director of an organisation called Share Life, said, we live in this wonderful country that so values each and every individual and family. To even consider taking away the right of families to participate in the end-of-life decisions of their loved ones is inconceivable to me. Bear in mind, Bruce Myerson is a double transplant recipient. He says the world's best performers in organ donation, including Spain, Portugal and Croatia, all respect the wishes of the family. It comes down to how the families are dealt with in the hospital, rather than denying the veto power of families over a loved one's organ donation plans. And finally, Professor Bruce Pussell, a transplant physician, said, we need medical specialists with the training and empathy to be there for a family, to provide support and information and enable them not to consent to the process, but to accept and acknowledge the wishes of their loved one. So, Holly Northam, can I take you to your time and your experience as the organ and tissue donation coordinator for the Australian Capital Territory? You must have received calls at all hours of the day and night from hospitals to say, we need you here now. Someone has died, the family is here, and we need to talk to them about organ donation. How do you begin that conversation with those traumatised and bereaved people?
Thank you so much for asking, Tony. It is an incredibly privileged role that people who work in that space have, and I can't highlight enough how important it is when going to talk with a family, is to recognise that for every family who walks this awful day, you know, we all know that at any time, any one of us, it's always a possibility, that we can't even begin to understand the space that they're in. So it's always a case of going in with a very, very open heart and an open mind to the needs of where the family are, and trying to understand where they're at and what they need at that particular time. Sometimes they might need somebody to just sit with them for a few minutes and allow them some space to think. They often need a glass of water, a comfortable chair, a quiet space somewhere near where their relative is, but where they don't have alarms beeping in their ears. And many of the families that I've worked with, one of the really important things they need is simple, clear information and some compassion. And I find that we have a very generous-hearted community, and I have never, ever come across a family who hasn't been wanting to engage and to actually understand a little bit more information, and be, when given the space to think about the donation possibilities.
Would it be your job to, would you be the first one to utter these words and start to raise the topic?
Yes, there have been many times when I actually have been the first one to raise the subject with them.
So you're dealing often with people who at this particular point in time, they are so traumatised, may not even know their phone number, their address, their own middle name. They are in a state of shock because they're gathered at a hospital because a loved one, maybe a car accident for some other reason, particularly if it's a younger person. They're beside themselves in this sort of circumstance. It must be such a challenge to begin to have that conversation with them.
That's right. And that's where, the skill and the expertise is so important, because you can't just sort of walk into a family, as you say, who can't, you know, at that stage even remember where they've parked the car, and say, well, actually, look, now I'm here and I want to ask you to donate your relative's organs, because you know they're absolutely going to say, there's no way in the world I'm going to donate my relative's organs. What are you talking about? It's very much a case of you need to go into the space and try and understand where they are. Have they seen a doctor? Have they had a chance to see their relative? Have they had a chance to understand exactly what's going on? And they need to have been in the space to be able to do all of those things before we can even begin to start to ask the incredibly sensitive questions around organ donation. Because, unfortunately, most people, when they're actually in this moment, have no idea what the processes are around organ donation. They've heard comment about organ donation in the media. But in our education, we haven't actually taught our Australian population about what actually happens at the time when they're asked to donate their relative's organs, and the space that they'll be in and the circumstances they'll be in. So they don't actually know what will happen next if they say yes. And those unknowns become huge fears if you don't present the information so that people can understand what's actually going to be required of them if they say yes.
All right, you're listening to Weekend Overnights. I'm Tony Arthur, and our guest is Holly Northam, Assistant Professor of Critical Care Nursing at the University of Canberra and formerly the Organ and Tissue Donation Coordinator for the Australian Capital Territory, and a PhD student studying why families are declining organ donation. So my next question to you, Holly, in some of these situations, though, time is very critical. The loved one has already died. It's not someone who is on life support, and there may be some time here to really think this all through and talk it all through. If the loved one has really died, time is critical for those organs to be worthwhile for transplantation, even more pressure on the family.
You're right, Tony. Time is critical, and I guess I just have to. I'm going to be really awful, and I'm going to have to pick you up on a point here.
Go ahead.
Which classically illustrates how few people really understand the process around organ donation. You mentioned that the person has died, and it's not as though there's a machine that can keep the organs functioning. Well, in reality, most of the people who die and donate their organs actually have died on a machine, and the machine is kept functioning while these conversations are happening. So we do actually have the time, and it's one of the reasons why there are not a lot of cases of organ donation, because effectively the only time we can arrange for the donation of organs for transplantation is when someone has died in an environment where they're on a machine. And so that limits the number of deaths in a year where donation can happen. So helping people to have their head around the fact that their relative is actually dead, but they're actually on a machine, so they give the impression of life because, and I'm sorry, I hope this makes sense for you. The way we declare death requires that there is no longer any function of the brain. So whether somebody has a heart attack and collapses in the street, stops breathing and the circulation stops functioning and doesn't go to the brain anymore and then the person dies, or if they're in a hospital and they've had a critical injury to the brain and something has happened to stop the blood flow to the brain, we can actually maintain the heartbeat and circulation to the organs without the blood. The blood may not be able to get to the brain because the brain is so swollen and has died, and that's called brain death. And it's in that situation that most people are asked about organ donation.
All right. Our number is 1-300-800-222 if you'd like to join this discussion. You are most welcome to 1-300-800-222. In particular, if you have been in this most awful of circumstances and you've been approached by an organ and tissue donation coordinator and you've talked this issue through with your family there, you might like to share with us, and I understand that would be difficult, but if you felt like sharing with us your experience of that, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Look, before we go to calls, Holly, a couple of questions I would like to ask, and they are echoed by several SMS listeners this morning. They want to know, Craig says, Tony, is it enough for your next of kin to agree even if the rest of the family disagree? And Mark says, who are the quote-unquote family that makes the decision? Is it the spouse, children, parents, siblings? Just exactly with whom do I need to discuss my intention to donate? Who has the final say?
Okay, now here again, this requires a lot of finesse. Generally, in an intensive care unit or an emergency department, when something has happened, some trauma has happened, family begin to arrive. And we know in our society that family can be a very complex group of people. They can consist of maybe a wife and children. It could also be blended families. It could be partners from yesteryear. It can be grandparents, it can be, and so the list goes on. So what actually ends up happening is the law is used by many of the states and territories in their description of family, but it eventually ends up being a senior available next of kin. So most often the person who actually signs the documentation is the partner of a person who has died, or the most senior person in the family who's with the person when they die. It's usually following a consensus agreement with the family that are present. Now, we all know that can be a very difficult situation, so it requires even more skill by the healthcare professionals to manage the dynamics of families when approaching this question. And there again, in Spain and in the US and all sorts of countries who do very, very well in their organ donation rates, this can be done, and it can be done very effectively and respectfully. But it requires skill to make sure that the right people who are really appropriate for making the decision are the ones left to make the decision without causing a major family breakdown.
So in the first instance, it goes to a spouse or partner.
That's right.
Then it may be a child, particularly if that child is over 18.
That's right.
And then may revert to a parent or a sibling, depending on whether you're married, not married, have children, and marital status.
Yes, and it follows for each individual state or territory's legislation as to who is the senior available next of kin. However, that being said, it generally ends up being what the whole group agreed to. So,
but no doubt, I imagine there's times where that's not always easy to get that consensus.
No, absolutely. And there again, this is often where it's important to have good, clear information available. So, for instance, I've had the privilege of being in situations where somebody in the room has raised that the loved one wanted to be an organ donor, and can we go ahead with that? And there's been family members in the room who said, oh, no, we don't want that. That's totally, you know, against what we believe. And then the skill in this situation is to then try to understand, why is the person in the room who knows their relative want to be an organ donor saying no? What is their fear? What's causing this concern? So then the health professional's job is to identify what those concerns are and address them, so that by the end of a conversation, and sometimes, as you said, there's not a lot of time, so you're usually looking at a period of over, you know, maybe an hour or over 2 hours where there's discussion and continued information and sharing and further discussion. The family can all come to agreement. And I've found that if you give good, clear information, most of the people who felt very negative about organ donation at the beginning of the conversation decide, if they know their loved one wanted to do it, that that's a good idea.
Yeah, notwithstanding that, approximately 50% will decline to sign the consent form when it really comes time to put the pen in their hand.
Absolutely. And that's the brunt of my research, is to find out what their families are experiencing when they're being asked. Because
What have you discovered so far? Why do 50% say no?
Well, the families, certainly the research and the information that families are giving to me backs up that there's not enough clear information about the processes. So internationally, there's a whole lot of research that's been done with families who've agreed to organ donation, saying, look, these are the things that help. And number one amongst those things is trusting the system, having an understanding of what the process actually entails, knowing their relatives' wishes. So if they can see that they trust what's going on, they trust the staff, they believe that their relative is being cared for and treated with respect and will not be mutilated or cared for badly, then they will automatically almost go ahead with the process. Questions have often been asked about religion. And it's not generally really well understood that the world's major religions will support organ donation, support it as a choice that's made by families and for individuals when they're dying or when death has occurred, and that it's actually something that goes to benefit humankind and is supported by the Islamic faith, the Christian faith. The Pope has absolutely put his support behind organ donation. Even the Jewish faith have said that it's such a good thing, and there have been statements of support for organ donation. So it's not a religious issue. We know that the bodies are treated with a great deal of respect, so it shouldn't be about bodily mutilation. But if people have these fears and they're not addressed, then they will say no. So that is what I believe is happening at times in Australia, is people that are not understanding the benefits of organ donation, and they're not understanding how well cared for their relative is in the process of organ donation.
All right, well, let's see if we can improve that understanding amongst those who are with us on Weekend Overnights now. Holly Northam is our guest, Assistant Professor of Critical Care Nursing at the University of Canberra. Holly, I do have callers online. I'll leave your line wide open, so feel free to jump in and add a comment or ask a question if you wish to at any stage, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Let's firstly go to Ace, who's with us this morning. And Ace, you wanted to bring up the topic of religious beliefs. You've heard some of what Holly's already said. Do you relate to that?
Most certainly. Good morning, Holly and Tony. How are
good
you
morning
guys?
To you.
And all the listeners out there. Holly, I've got a friend of mine who was a nurse and overseas, and she relayed a couple of stories to me about her efforts in Kenya and UK about being the first online to talk to relatives about this very issue. And one of the things that she mentioned, she said, sometimes it's person's religious morality that actually is a sticking point. I personally am an organ donor. I've spoken to my wife and my parents and my brother and family about the fact that if anything did happen in an accident or a tragic circumstance, I personally want my my organs donated. And I think that's a very positive thing that people should be doing, and I'm sure you'd condone and endorse that, because I think it's one of the things that, I mean, we work on the old thing of make sure you wear clean underwear because you could be hit by a bus tomorrow. And it's not the fact that your clean underwear is important, it's the fact that your body could be the important part of somebody's life in the future. And I think sometimes in the shock, in the situation, I'm sure you've dealt with it firsthand, Holly, obviously, some people, I think, freak out. Because, as you said, the information is not necessarily given about what's going to be happening to their loved ones. And how have you found that to be something that particularly very strong religious, very faith person, those people, you know what I'm talking about, those people go, no, this is not what it's about, etc. How has that gone with you, Holly?
Thanks so much for calling in, Ace. And in my experience that... this is part of a skilled care. If you know that that family has a strong religious conviction, usually the hospital already knows that there's some need for pastoral care and support. Mm-hmm. It's extremely important to work with the pastoral care team to support that family. So you never, ever go in thinking that you're an expert in anything. You work with experts in the environment. So if, for instance, that person has a pastoral carer who's with them, giving them spiritual care to them and to their family, you would hopefully be given the opportunity to work with them. And I know in hospitals, I've always worked very closely with chaplaincy and with the pastoral carers. And in fact, I've been stunned on a number of occasions where the pastoral care community have actually come and referred a case to me, saying, look, we've been speaking with this family. They really want to talk about organ donation. The healthcare team isn't quite in that space yet. And we'd like some more information so that we can give it back to the family who are thinking about the fact that they may be asked to make this decision.
Look, I'll move on because I do have lots of callers, but thank you for raising the point. But I will ask you quickly, Holly, do many people find it a surprise that organ donation will in fact not clash with their religious beliefs? Because you've talked about quite a few religions that do support it.
They are often quite surprised, and it's one of those things of, you know, most people in the, our community fortunately don't have to think about organ donation every day, and it's one of those little bits of expert knowledge, if you like, that people who are working in the environment know and assume that everyone else knows. But if it's not something that's said from the churches every day of the week, because, you know, there's other lots of huge important issues to be addressed.
Probably not too many sermons on organ donation.
you actually need to have somebody who knows what they're talking about to give you that advice.
All right. Let's, in fact, go to Tasmania now. Kurt is with us. And, Kurt, just before Christmas, your grandson was a transplant recipient.
Yes, and I'm so grateful that somebody was able to do that for our family. As a recipient, and speaking for my grandson, who is only 5.5 months old, I can only assume that out there there's a family that has an empty place at the table and Christmas presents left under their tree. I don't know how to quantify that, to thank those people that they would do that, because it's such a sensitive issue with younger people who can't speak for themselves to say, yes, I will. And I can only throw that to Holly to ask how she's experienced things like that with younger people.
Can I just clarify, Kurt, your grandson is 5.5 months old?
Yep.
And to the best of your knowledge, received the transplant from...
I'm assuming, and I can only make the assumption one, because of the physicality.
Yeah, a young one would have been a similar...
He received a liver transplant.
It was a liver transplant. What about that, Holly? Would it be a similar age, the donor? Would he or she be a similar age?
Yeah, either be that or there's been an older donor where a portion of the liver's been able to be used to be transplanted. Look, Kurt, You're absolutely right. I've spoken to many families over the years who have been touched by transplantation and its life-saving ability, and they don't know where to begin to say thank you for families. All I can say is if you get an opportunity to write a letter through your organisation to say thank you to their family, those letters are really, really appreciated. And people struggle because they don't know how to find the words.
And
it doesn't matter.
And just to add to you what you were saying before about educating people to give organs, many years ago, and I'm going back 45-odd years now, you could donate portions of your eyes to the Eye and Ear Hospital in Melbourne, and they'd come round to the schools, and they'd done a sort of a small education program, and you were given little cards to take home to show to your parents and a bit of an information package. And I signed a donor registry thing back then, but after all these years, I don't imagine they'd want anything off me. But I thought the education side of it was very important.
The education side of it is hugely important, and I'm so glad you had that opportunity. And make sure that you sign on to the Australian Organ Donor Register to let people know your wishes, because it doesn't matter how old you are, there's still a possibility you might be able to help someone. Even it doesn't matter where your death occurs, that there is still a possibility you can donate eye tissue.
And corneal transplants are one of the most successful and can be done with older donors,
aren't
they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kurt, how's your grandson doing?
He's doing very well. He's still in hospital. And it just gives me an opportunity, too, to thank organisations like Ronald McDonald House. I know you don't advertise.
No, you're right, you're right.
They've certainly been an aid to our family. And to all the people in the hospital who are so sensitive and caring in looking after the families of the transplantees.
That's great. But, Kurt, I must answer your original question, which was about, you know, what's it like for families of children who are faced with the death. I've got to say, it's always blown me away that most of the families I've worked with who've donated their children's organs have actually approached the staff before they've had to be asked, because the families I've worked with have been in a space of they will do anything to bring some good out of this tragic situation, and they're often very fearful that another family will go through what they've been through. So I've been absolutely amazed for parents of newborns who have experienced the tragedy of the death of their brand new baby, and they might never have had a child before, saying, look, we don't want anyone else to go through what we're going through. Is there any way that our baby can help someone else? So that is the kind of extraordinary Australians that we have. And I know, it's, you know, we're just past Australia Day, but my goodness, we've got some amazing Australians who are very, very
On this particular day, I would recommend to people just think a little bit about it before you cut it off, because to our family, it's made a lot of difference.
Yeah, certainly
well,
has.
Well, it's certainly, you know, it is the difference between life and death. And we know, in fact, one of my biggest beefs at the moment, I'm busily writing a paper, is we don't know how many people die waiting for a transplant. It's not commonly available in the media. And we don't understand the needs of children who are waiting for a transplant. We don't know how many children are on the waiting list or are too sick to be on the waiting list in need of an organ.
But no, perhaps if newspapers published the figures like they publish the weather, the response might be better if there's a little byline there somewhere for the organ transplant line.
Well, I've got a feeling, Kurt, you and your family will be spreading the word in a very positive way. Our fingers are crossed for your grandson and hope that's a very, very happy outcome for you. And maybe you'll get to write that letter, as Holly suggests. Holly, I'd like to go to Lorna now, who joins us from the Tweed Valley, because it sort of follows on from something Kurt was just saying, that he'd registered a long time ago, but perhaps I'm too old now and who'd want my eyes. Lorna, you want to ask about the possibility of donating your organs even if you've had some health issues.
Yes, I do. My health issues came to my attention. And by the way, I'm so thankful for people like you, Tony, and you, Holly. In 2003... I had blood tests done in the January, and the results came from the laboratory that I am over the safety limit of heavy metals in my body, in my bloodstream, in my entire body. pollution from the road, the freeway, which is 400 metres from my home, washed into my tank, and I was drinking poisoned water, and my cattle were drinking poisoned water. 80% of my cattle died, and I have struggled all my life since then. Thankfully, I take a lot of good herbals, but I spent a lot of money on them, but recognition has never been given to me that toxicity of my body has been caused by pollution. I have been ignored.
Yeah, now, but Lorna, I'm going to ask you to stick to the topic here. I take into account what you've said, and you've spoken to us about this sort of issue
before. I want to know, Tony.
But you want to be an organ donor.
Always.
But you have concerns that because of what you've been through, that in fact you won't be available. Holly, does that sometimes happen? You get the case where families in fact come to you or approach the people at the hospital, the medical staff, and say, okay, things are not looking for good for our loved one. We want them to be an organ donor. And you have to actually say to them, sorry, nothing we can do with your loved one's organs?
That's sometimes the case, but a greater concern to most of us is the fact that sometimes families and individuals assume they can't be an organ donor and so think that they need to say no. Sometimes they fill out documentation like the driver's licence or the Australian Organ Donor Register and say no because they think they're not medically suitable. What we say is please, please, please don't do your own assessment. Lorna, you may well be able to help someone. We don't know. We would need to do that, get a whole medical history and look at this situation at the time of death because things changed. So back in 2003, you might have had a great deal of contaminants in your body, but by the time, you know, whenever it happens sometime in the future that you die, you may not have those contaminants anymore. So we look at every case on an individual basis and we make that decision and talk to the family about it at that time. But
so don't count yourself out, Lorna.
Don't count yourself out, whatever you do. Okay. Nobody should count themselves out.
All right, we've got 4 minutes to the news. But I just did want to clarify also with you, Holly, am I right? If someone is a prime donor, I'm struggling for the right words here, but almost the perfect donor, is it 9 or 10 organs can be used?
Tony, it's often confusing for people, but there are many, many people. I'm always conscious that you can't just limit it to 9 or 10 because if somebody's donating heart valves and they're donating other tissues as well for transplant, there can be many, many recipients. In some places, you know, if you started counting, you'd be looking up to 40 people sometimes.
Okay, let's just quickly see if we can squeeze in Sally, who's with us from Busselton, because Sally, you had an experience 10 years ago of donating a kidney to your brother.
Yes, I gave my brother a kidney 10 years ago. He is very well, and I'm still living.
It's a traumatic experience, though, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't for me. He needed it, and I was able to give it. And it's more now that he's still alive and has seen his family experience of weddings and grandchildren and that sort of thing that touched me more now.
Perhaps
than
I should
it
have,
did at the time.
Perhaps I should have said risky rather than traumatic. There are risks associated.
Oh, well, this is it. And my other brother said, who's going to look after you, sis? And, of course, me being me said, I will look after myself.
But you've had those 10 wonderful years. He's doing well and,
yes.
And you're being okay. And,
yes.
And so the family knows you are happy to donate if it's possible when the time comes?
Yes, I hope they do.
All right. Sally, thank you very much for sharing your experience. Because time is going to beat us, Holly, this morning, do you want to hear from people about their experiences? Can they be in touch with you to help you with your PhD on why families are declining organ donation?
Oh, look, thank you so much, Tony. I would love anybody who's listening or knows somebody who might be interested in this research to contact me. It is extremely important and very difficult to actually contact families who've been through the experience of saying no to donation. It's not a bad thing. It's, and I want people to understand that my research is about making things as good as they possibly can be for families who are faced with this decision. And we know that the publicity is about, you know, say yes, but sometimes people do say no, and I want to try to understand why. So if you can reach me, it would be of huge benefit to lots of people. And certainly I'm sure Tony's got my contact details there, which would be available.
Are you a website or an email address? We can
An email you know? Address yep. would be fabulous, through the University of Canberra. So, and my name is Holly, H-O-L-L-Y, dot Northam, spelled N-O-R-T-H-A-M, at canberra.edu.au. So the University of Canberra, and they can be, they'll find me if you ring.
All right. Even if they just go to the University of Canberra website, they can track down Holly Northam through that and be in touch, or call you through the University of Canberra.
That would be fantastic.
Holly, we certainly wish you well with that research, and if I'm not presenting this program, whoever is, I'm sure would be delighted to hear from you again if and when that's available, to talk about it and perhaps, again, make things better and keep that organ donor rate across Australia increasing year by year, as we've seen the last couple of years. Good luck with it, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.